Vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So, let us see. Tonight, we'll read from Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And let us see what we'll read. Let us read chapter 7, Knowledge of the Absolute, text 7. Mataparataram nanyat kinchidasti dananjaya mai sarvam idam protam sutre mani gana iva. Translation. O conqueror of wealth, there is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me, as pearls are strung on a thread. Let us repeat this responsibly, please. You can repeat after me. O conqueror of wealth,
there is no truth superior to me.
Everything rests upon me, as pearls are strung on a thread. In other words, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in a nutshell. So I'll read the purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. There is a common controversy over whether the Supreme Absolute Truth is personal or impersonal. As far as Bhagavad Gita is concerned, the Absolute Truth is the Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. And this is confirmed in every step. In this verse in particular, it is stressed that the Absolute Truth is a person, that the Personality of Godhead is the Supreme Absolute Truth, is also the affirmation of the Brahma Samhita. Ishvara Parama Krishna, Satchit Ananda Vigraha. That is, the Supreme Absolute Truth, Personality of Godhead, is Lord Krishna, who is the primeval Lord, the reservoir of all pleasure, Govinda, and the eternal form of complete bliss and knowledge. These authorities leave no doubt that the Absolute Truth is the Supreme Person, the cause of all causes. The impersonalist, however, argues on the strength of the Vedic version given in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad 3.10. Tato yad utaratam tad arupam anamayam yad etad vidur amritas te bhavantiya te tere dukam evapianti. Which means, in the material world, Lord Brahma, the primeval living entity within the universe, is understood to be the supreme amongst the demigods, human beings, and lower animals. But beyond Brahma, there is the transcendence, who has no material form and is free from all material contaminations.
anyone who can know him also becomes transcendental. But those who do not know him suffer the miseries of the material world.
Actually, the purport goes on a little further, but I think we'll just, so we don't go too much over time, we'll just say a few words about this. Mataparataram nanyat kinchidasti dananjaya mai sarvam idam protam sutre mani gana iva. O conqueror of wealth, there is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung on a thread. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Thank you. Yes. So there are many interesting points here. I think one interesting point we just experienced, I mean, in the last few seconds, and what to speak of when we're out chanting, that is that even though there are many spiritual activities, like offering arti, worshipping the deity, like that, like performing havan, fire sacrifice, like sitting and silently meditating, and like chanting the holy names out loud, and so many other activities also, reading Bhagavad Gita, telling people about Krishna, cooking for Krishna, cleaning for Krishna. There are so many things to be done. So many different types of spiritual activities. But amongst them, well, shall we say, they're on different levels, or, if not on different levels, they have different effects, different degrees of effect. Generally, the effect is one of bliss, and clearing of the mind, peace of mind, clarity of mind, clarity of thinking and perceiving like this. These are very prominent, most prominent amongst the different results which come to us when we perform spiritual activity. Yes, we become very happy. The anxieties of day-to-day life, they melt away, disappear. And the mind, which is often full of different things going back and forward and thinking about this and that and what's happening in the world. But the mind becomes peaceful and clear and focused on Krishna. So amongst these many different activities, in this age, Kali Yuga, we're in Kali Yuga right now, which is the most degraded time. I don't think anyone would really have a very hard time appreciating that this Kali Yuga, this time that we're in right now, is very degraded and very unpleasant, isn't it? Yes. So, in this difficult time, this age of Kali, the recommended activity
is the chanting of the holy names. There are so many activities, and it is not just because the chanting of the holy names is emphasized, does not mean that the other activities are no good. That would be going far too far the other way. So that's not the point at all. But the point is that in this Kali Yuga, because of the atmosphere and just the general environment in all respects, so this chanting is particularly recommended because it is particularly effective as far as giving the result. The result being we become very happy, lifted out of our humdrum ordinary existence, humdrum ordinary state of mind, lifted out of that to a blissful level of existence, and the mind becomes very clear, peaceful, satisfied. And this we have experience of. We have experience that oftentimes when we are chanting together, oftentimes when we're having kirtan, singing Hare Krishna, then oftentimes the devotees dance. Have you seen that? Have you done that? Yes. Oh. Sometimes, what to speak of dance, sometimes they fly through the roof. Watch out. Yeah, it's amazing. So now, just to clarify, just so we can appreciate the importance of this point and the correctness, actually, of this point. I imagine, would I be right, that you are all, I think the great majority of you, you're from some type of Hindu background, Tamil background, something, am I right? Isn't it? Yep. So you've seen, you've been in many a havan, haven't you? Isn't it? I'm sure you have. Have you ever seen in the middle of a havan, someone is sitting there, you know, swaha, this and that, mantras, and throwing the grains and pouring the ghee. Did you ever see anyone just in the middle of it? It's just so, it's having such an effect on them. They just leap up and start dancing. Did you ever see that? Swaha, dance, swaha. Yeah, you know, we're not trying to belittle that activity, because we do it also. We do it also. When there's initiations, when there's a wedding, and different occasions, we also do fire sacrifice. But it is not as prominent, it is not focused on as much as this chanting. Yeah. Even offering arti, in fact, shortly, we will, in fact, probably, possibly, I will offer arti. And I imagine you have offered arti before, isn't it? Yeah? Did you ever see anyone offering arti and dancing and jumping and offering arti? I don't think so. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Actually, we do that every day. In our temple in Chatsworth, we have 6 artis a day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year. Yes, so now, why am I saying this? Why am I making this point? Is because I just want you to appreciate in terms of result. You know, we should be practical. It's not just a matter that we believe. We believe something, and actually we don't really know, but we just believe and we just hope for the best, you know. Hope I'm right. I'm believing in Krishna. Hope he really is God. Because, you know, if he's not, and if I only find out when I die, it'll be too late. So, sure, I really hope he's God. So Krishna consciousness, in fact, real religion, is not just a matter of believing in something vague or even worse than vague, I mean less clear than vague, and hoping for the best. It's not. It's very practical. You can experience it. Just like when you eat a nice meal, first class biryani and dal, or aloo bini, no, some first class prasad, first class, then do you need anyone to come and tell you you're enjoying this, you see? And then you realize, oh really, okay. Do you ever need anyone to come and do that? This tastes good. Oh yes, you're right. If you say so. You know what I mean? You're getting full now. Am I? Oh really? Oh, okay. Do you need someone to do that? Of course you don't. Because it's clear. You're experiencing it yourself. You don't need someone to come and tell you if it tastes good, if you're enjoying it, if you're becoming full, if you're feeling some life and energy through eating that very nice food, prasadam. So similarly, in spiritual life, in a certain sense at least, you don't really need someone to come and tell you, ah, you're making progress. But you'll feel it. You'll feel it. In that you become blissful. You become free from the anxieties of everyday material life. You become clear in your consciousness, able to tolerate the difficulties this world throws at you more and more, and increasingly blissful and happy on the spiritual platform. Yes. So this we experience when we're chanting. This we experience when we're chanting, that we become very happy and we dance, and it's very wonderful, wonderful experience. So amongst all the many activities that there are, which are all very nice spiritual activities, very genuine, but amongst all of them, the result is most prominently seen in the chanting. Particularly in the chanting. You know, we have a saying. Well, you know the famous saying, the family that prays together stays together. You know that one, right? How about this one? The family that dances together advances together. How's that? That's a step further, you see. It's one thing to stay together and not get separated. It's another thing to advance together. Yes, so this is Krishna consciousness. This is Krishna consciousness that is very practical. And you can see that you're advancing because it becomes relishable. You're enjoying it. You're loving it to the point where you're just dancing freely and joyfully, very, very happily. And all the anxieties and problems, they're just gone away. Who cares? All those problems you thought were so important and, you know, you didn't know what to do about them, suddenly they're not there. Where did they go? Yeah. This is the effect of Krishna consciousness, particularly in the chanting. Most dramatically experienced and clearly experienced when we chant very nicely and really become absorbed in the chanting, particularly with other devotees. Yeah, so we want everyone to chant. I know that some of you are relatively somewhat newer to Krishna consciousness, although looking around I see many of the old hands. Yes, so many long-time devotees are here. That's very nice. But for those of you who are a little newer, try and bear this in mind, that we should focus particularly on the chanting. Other things are there. They can be there. That's okay. We don't tell people you can't do this, you can't do that so much. At least when it comes to different types of spiritual activity, but particularly we emphasize this chanting. Now, just to refer to this verse briefly, because we don't want to keep you too late. This is a very important verse because This is one of those verses in Bhagavad Gita in which Lord Krishna makes it clear that he is the supreme. Now, I know also in Hinduism that, and I include, you know, Tamil, Telugu, Gujarati, and, you know, what to speak of, those from Bihar, Madhya Pradesh, and other parts as well. Yes, I know some people, they get a little confused about this, or, you know, quite confused even. Is Krishna God supreme? Is it Shiva? Is it Durga? Is it Ganesh? Is it Hanuman? Is it Madhaviran? Is it, you know, who is it? Is it my mother-in-law? It may be her. I got to really watch out there. Depends on your mother-in-law. And I'm sorry if any of you are mothers-in-law. It's okay. I'm sure you're very nice. So there, you all know this, isn't it? I'm sure every single one of you sitting here is aware of this. But here, in this verse, this is one of those verses, and there are some others in Bhagavad Gita in which Krishna makes it very, very clear that he is the supreme absolute truth. And in the Sanskrit he says, Mata parataram nanyat. Yeah. Without going too much into the intricacies of the Sanskrit language, we could just point out that when Krishna says parataram, parataram, then Krishna is saying parataram means superior, more superior to me. Yeah. Superior to me, na anyat. There is no other. Na anyat. No other. Mata. Than me, parataram, superior to no other. Krishna's saying, there's no truth superior to me. Yeah. There's no truth superior to Krishna. He is the supreme absolute truth. Everything is coming from him. But people are not clear on that. Therefore they become confused. Here though, Krishna explains the reasoning behind it. That he says, everything rests on me. Sutre. Like you have a sutra, right? At weddings, don't they have some Mangala sutra? A sutra, like a necklace type of thing. So sutre mani gana eva, Krishna says in this verse, that everything is resting on me, just like pearls are resting on a thread, on a necklace, like that. Now, when you have a necklace, just like so many of us here, we have our neck beads and their little beads arranged on and strung on a thread. So you may have some pearls or some other stones or some other thing on a thread. Thread is running through it. Therefore, those beads or whatever, they're hanging in a uniform way, orderly way, around your neck. Now, is it, what is it that makes the beads hang in an orderly way? It is the thread. If you took the thread out and just sort of put, you know, the beads there and just went like that, would the beads without the thread, would they just hang there, just sit there? Obviously, they certainly wouldn't. It would just be chaos. You'd have beads all over the place. So, it's the thread. It's the thread. It's not the beads. The beads are dependent on the thread. The thread is not dependent on the beads. Yeah. But what is the problem? You know, if you're a little slow, you know, like a little quite slow, then you might think it's just the beads. The beads are hanging there because of the beads. Because why? Because you can't see the thread, isn't it? Yeah, you cannot see the thread. This is the thing. So Krishna is supporting everything. Everything is resting on Krishna. But the problem is, our problem is that we can't see the thread. And don't you have to be a little slow to think that the beads are just sitting there without the thread? Wouldn't that be a bit stupid? Isn't it? Wouldn't it be exceptionally stupid? So, unfortunately, with all due respect to everybody, but there's a lot of slow people around, I think. A lot of people are not so bright. They think that this world, this material world, is just going on. It's just the world. It's just matter. Just material things. This material world is just going on of its own accord. The problem is they can't see the thread. They can't see that Krishna is there, holding it together. And just like we said, if you take the thread out, then the beads fall down, it just becomes a mess. So people in their lives, when they take the thread out, when they take Krishna out, they don't think he's there. They think it's going on without him. And they think it can go on and it should go on without him. So what will happen? Just like the beads when you take the thread out, so your life, if you take the thread, if you take Krishna out, what will happen? Your life will become chaos. And your life will fall down. And that's why, let us just look a little deeper into life. That is why this world is such a mess. Anyone not think this world is a bit of a mess? If you feel it isn't, we'll give you a ticket to Iraq. And you can report back, a one-way ticket, and you can report back and tell us what you think, how it is. It's a mess, on this planet, in recorded history, the Western version of recorded history, there has not been a day in the last, whatever it is, couple of thousand years or something, there has not been one day when there has not been at least one, and often more than one, quite major war going on. Yeah. So, life, it's a bit chaotic. Not so good. You know what the biggest killer of human beings is? Is it cancer? Is it heart disease? Is it old age? What is it? It's not AIDS either. It's abortion. Abortion is the biggest killer of human beings. 50 million, this is going back a couple of years, and it wasn't even as popular then as it is now. 50 million human beings a year. That's as many as were killed in the entire Second World War in 5 or 6 years. And, who's doing that? Well, again, with all due respect, it's the mothers, isn't it? It's the mothers themselves are killing their own babies. Now, that really says something, doesn't it? So this material world, the world we're living in, even out here in Verulam, it really is a bit upside down, quite a bit. Why is that? It's because people are not recognizing the thread. Actually, they're sort of pulling the thread out of their lives, pulling Krishna out. And just like the beads, when you pull the thread out, bang, they fall down, and it's just a mess. So our lives, society, which is sort of just a combination of lives of many different individuals, a whole lot of chaotic lives becomes a whole chaotic society, becomes a whole chaotic planet, and that's the world we live in. So, let's try and take Krishna consciousness seriously. You know, not just as, you know, we may have been doing some ritualistic form of religion before. You know, we fast every Tuesday, and then sometimes we do this and sometimes we do that. Just some sort of formula. And don't now just replace that with a Hare Krishna formula. It becomes just the Hare Krishna version of the same thing. But try and go more deeply into it, because this is more deep. And it can actually give you, it can actually elevate you noticeably. Not that someone will have to come and tell you before you realize that it's happening, but noticeably it can elevate you in the sense of making you so much happier and clearing your consciousness, clearing the mind, so you can become fixed and absorbed, fixed on God, and no longer just caught up in everyday existence. And particularly through chanting. Okay, now we got a few questions here. Let's quickly just try and answer them. Does the Hare Krishna movement have a following in Iraq and Iran? Well, their devotees in Iran, and I flew in 1976, I went to India for the first time. And you know what we did? We flew from London. I joined in London. We flew on Iraqi Airlines. And we stopped in Baghdad both ways in this really crummy airport. And these people, they were looking at us like, oh, we don't like you at all. You better get out of here. So I don't know about Iraq, but in Iran, there are devotees in Iran. And I think we still have a restaurant in Iran, in Tehran, which is the capital, a Hare Krishna restaurant, sort of undercover. Because there, you know, if you walk around dressed like this, you probably get arrested. Yeah, it's illegal. So in Iran, there are devotees. Pakistan, there's lots of devotees in Pakistan, plenty. Bangladesh, of course 20% of the population there is Hindu at least, Bengali, Gaudiya Vaishnav type. All over, you'll find devotees. You'd be surprised, you'd be amazed actually, the places you bump into devotees. Yeah. Let me just tell you one quick little story about that. Some of our devotees were distributing books in America. They were traveling around America distributing books. One day, in the very town where they were distributing books, some criminals robbed a bank. And as it happened, the criminals made a getaway in a vehicle, in a van, which was identical with the devotee's van. Same make, year, model, color. It was just identical. And even in America, on the number plate, they put the state. Like even here we have, you know, ND or whatever, GP or something. So there they write the name of the state. So the devotees were from Michigan. This van of the criminals was from Michigan also. Would you believe it? So, but the devotees, they didn't even know that. Anyway, that night they were sleeping in the van in some little sort of caravan park or something. Suddenly at midnight, there are all these helicopters flying above and spotlights, and like 20 police cars around, you know, with their lights full on the devotees from every side, and about like 30 or 40 policemen with machine guns, all pointed at the devotees, so the devotees got out like, wow, what on earth is happening here? So the chief policeman came. You know, he was about like 3 meters tall, and about this wide. He was the real thing. So he came up to the devotees and said, "We know who you are. You robbed the bank." And the leader amongst the devotees said, "What? Us? Rob the bank? No, no, no. We're Hare Krishnas. We're Hare Krishnas, see? We're Hare Krishnas." The man said, "What? You're Hare Krishnas?" And the devotee said, "Yeah, look. We're distributing books, see? Look, Hare Krishnas, we're distributing books. Here, take one." So the man took the book, and he's looking at the book, and looking at the devotee, and looking at the book, and looking at the devotee, and he was saying, "Hare Krishnas." Then he walked right up to the devotee, you know, like about that far away, looking down on the devotee. The devotee's looking up like that. And this big policeman in his deep voice said, "All glories to Srila Prabhupada." Because he was a devotee. You'd be surprised, I tell you what. Yeah, you'd be surprised we've lost it here. Right, okay. And why not? And virilam too. Virilam, yeah. But we need more. Can you get some more? Is that okay? Some more devotees? Next time? Okay, thanks. Right. Please explain how one can overcome Maya. Well, you know, Maya means illusion. Means the deity, the controller of this illusion, of this world. But where Krishna is, actually there's one verse. What is that? Krishna Surya Sama Maya Haya Andhakar Yahan Krishna Tahan Nahi Mayara Adhikar. Krishna is like the sun, and Maya is like darkness. But wherever there is the sun, there cannot be darkness. So Maya is like darkness, Krishna is like the sunlight, even more than the sunlight. So if you stay in the sunlight, if you stay with the sun, you'll never be in darkness. Even if you try, you'll never be in darkness. So if you stay with Krishna, how do you stay with Krishna? You chant, you remember, you serve, you associate like that with devotees and with the process. You'll always be with Krishna. Then you'll always be in that sunlight, enlightenment of Krishna consciousness and far away from the darkness of Maya. How do we reconcile the war on the battlefield of Kurukshetra and the Iraqi war from a Krishna conscious view? Okay, well look, don't tell Mr. Bush or Saddam Hussein, for that matter, that I said this. But, you know, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, you had the good guys and the bad guys, right? There's always some good guys and bad guys. Who is what depends on, you know, the onlooker. But, you know, basically the idea is they're bad guys and good guys. So on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, there were some bad guys and there were some good guys. Actually, Krishna was there and Arjuna and Yudhisthira, and they really are good guys. They're just the best, most wonderful, glorious personalities on one side, trying to establish, you know, something which will actually benefit the world in real terms. And on the other side, you have the bad guys, but they're really bad guys. They just want to exploit everyone, and they couldn't care less about anyone other than themselves. So it really was a clash between good and evil. Now, in this case, you know, it might be a little difficult to say really clearly if there is a good side or a bad side, you know. Put it this way, if Mr. Bush and company don't find any atomic bombs in Iraq, you know, then they're going to look pretty stupid, aren't they? And they're going to look awfully stupid. They don't find... I mean, they've got plenty of atomic bombs in America, but these people can't have them. If they have one, you know, then they're terrible. Yeah. Anyway, you know, of course, we would be prone, I suppose, by conditioning to be more pro-America, isn't it? I mean, often, you know, the Muslims, they get a little carried away, don't they? But really, when you look at it, here, it's not exactly a clash between good and godliness and evil. It's more just different variations on bad. The Americans don't want to run out of oil, right? So they want to annex Iraq to get all their oil. It's not so good, really. So that's the difference. There are so many gods in India. Why is there war in Iraq? Well, you know, there's no war in India, is there? There's so many gods in India. Well, there's not really so many gods. If you think there's so many gods in India, it's like thinking that in South Africa, there are so many people in charge, I mean, like, in the government. It's like thinking they're all in, each one is in charge, you know, the Minister of Water Affairs. Suddenly you think he's just in charge of everything. The Minister of Finance, suddenly you think he's just in charge of everything. He's not. There's a structure to it, and there is someone in charge. But if you're confused, you might think that each one is in charge, or something like that, like completely in charge. So if we're confused, then we think that there's so many gods, and which one's in charge? Are they all in charge, or what's going on? But actually, there is a structure, there is a hierarchy, and we just have to learn it and become clear. And why is there war in Iraq? Well, you know what Prabhupada said? He said, because the Americans were so fond of their barbecues, briflays, right? Because they're so fond of barbecuing the dead bodies of cows. Therefore, so many of their sons died in Vietnam. Yeah. So because people are so attached to killing, particularly killing animals, killing every day, every single day, just killing and killing, and living by killing, so they'll die in the same way, violently. Yeah. Therefore it's important. It's important to follow a vegetarian diet and to actually just take prasadam. Yeah, this is very important. So we can get out of this lifestyle in which violence is so prominent. In fact, we're dependent on violence. We're dependent on killing. Either directly, or we just pay someone to kill for us. So we'd say that really is why there's war in Iraq, because of too much sinful activity, too much violence, so it comes back on you, and you get the violence on your head. So how's that? Sobering? Hope we didn't shock anyone. Is anyone there shocked? Just sort of thinking, wow, what's going on here? I hope not. All right, thank you for listening very patiently. And now we'll have Aarti and Guru Puja to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.